That cold case you're listening to? Nasty stuff. But you know what else is a crime? Missing even a moment of whatever you're doing to go on a drink run. Luckily, there's Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery. With Drizly, you can compare prices on the biggest selection of beer, wine, and spirits, then get them delivered in under 60 minutes. So download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com today.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire, part of the Decibel Geek Podcast Network. This week, we break the record with 1992's feel-good album of the year, Alice in Chains' Dirt.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire. My name is Baco, and I am joined by the soiled Loose Cannon. How are you this evening, Loose?
I am grimy, grubby, filthy, mucky, unwashed, and greasy as always, Baco. Glad to talk to you. How are you, sir?
I feel like you have a laptop in front of you with synonyms for dirt.
Nope. I can rip these off the cuff, as all our stuff is impromptu, improv, genius. But
you are that good.
I am.
You are that good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always know. You ask me 10 words that are similar to another word, and I will usually tell you in person to give me about 10 seconds as I look it up in Google and get back to you.
Yeah, you're like that guy who calls into a radio station with the trivia question, and they go,
for a very long time.
Their buddies like fucking typing it in. And well, how are you, man? I haven't talked to you since we wrapped recording the last episode about 5 minutes ago.
Don't let them look behind the curtain, Baco. I thought that was your rule.
Oh, you're right. What is it? Theater of the imagination. Sorry. I don't know where I was going there. So, but before we get into the episode, we do have a beer today from what I think is kind of a surprise contributor. Would you like to break down where today's beer came from and what it is?
Sure. So I have the GoFundMe app on my phone, so I get alerted immediately when somebody contributes a beer. And, you know, it'll tell me something like last time it'll say contributed from Matt Porter. Well, this time it was very intriguing because it said it was contributed $5 for beer from Jackson Galaxy.
Ooh, Jackson Galaxy?
Well, obviously that's some kind of like username or whatever.
You don't know who Jackson Galaxy is?
No, I'm guessing it's like the working title for Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, do me a favor. The listeners might enjoy this. The two of them know who he is. Why don't you do a quick Google search for us while we record here and pull up Jackson Galaxy?
All right. Is this going to be a porn star or something? Let me look here.
I just think you should know.
All right. It looks like a guy that definitely works a lot with his facial hair. A lot of sections that has beard and then not beard. It says Jackson Galaxy is a cat behaviorist and the host of the television show My Cat from Hell. He is 55 years old. He is 6'2". His full name is actually Richard Kirshner. His spouse is Manu Raybar. Let's see if she just looks like a chick. All right. Well, what do you? Does this a show you watch or something?
If your name was Richard Kirshner, wouldn't you change it to Jackson Galaxy?
Yeah, but Jackson Galaxy does sound a little ridiculous.
I've definitely seen the show. I don't know when it's on specifically. I think it's an Animal Planet show, but yeah. It's a bit of a good hurt. I love the beginning though, like when they like kind of do the credits and they show him, it's like musician by night, cat behaviorologist by day. So what did
so what is it? I imagine this guy like plucking the bass while behaving.
Yeah, he's pretending to play an acoustic guitar to an empty bar while they say that thing. So no, he has a guitar case filled with cat toys that he brings to everybody's home.
Is that his move?
That's his move. He's got treats in there. He's got little fluffy things, little fake mice, all sorts of stuff to keep any kind of cat from hell busy. Yeah, and he basically he turns your cat from hell into the lap cat from Awesome Land. Yeah, so I'll tell you this. I think I might actually be a cat behaviorologist, but I don't know it because every cat I've ever met thinks I'm the greatest. So.
My God, I gotta just tell you that you know, this is, you know, we're starting to get a little bit of fame here. We're having $5 contributed from cat behaviorists. What I'm looking for though in the future is when I see a little GoFundMe for $5 from Eddie Trunk.
Oh man, well, you know we have made it then. At that point, you could just basically walk in, go anywhere, and you look at a girl, go, "You over here, suck it."
That's right. Eddie Trunk, $5.
I split $5 from Eddie Trunk with a guy in Colorado.
Yeah. Now
you want some, don't you?
$2.50 from Eddie Trunk.
I'm sorry. It's actually $2.51 to you, $2.49 to me.
the reason being is the fact that we know you're listening, Eddie. We just want the GoFundMe contribution.
Yeah, please. Come on, Eddie.
Come on.
It's only $5. So then we can say you did something for us. Why don't we get back to what did Jackson Galaxy buy us for a beer?
He bought what a cat behaviorist would do, and that is the most generic thing we've got so far, and that is the original Light Pilsner, Miller Lite. Which, it's interesting that the last time I had Miller Lite, well, no, that's not true, but I like the fact that it has the retro label. When did they start that? About 4 years ago?
No idea. I don't care.
Okay, then. Anyway, I'm not sure if you know anything about Miller Lite, but it's...
it's spelled wrong.
It's That's right.
It's definitely not a fine Pilsner beer. I mean, I've drank my fair share of these things in my lifetime, but...
Just so you know, the secret is Miller Lite's special triple hops brewing recipe, which apparently the secret is to make it extremely bland. But also, it's from choice hops from the Pacific Northwest, as well as Noble Saz. I like how they try to sexy this up now. The Noble Saz hops, S-A-A-Z, which I've never heard of before because nobody else uses them except for Miller Lite, and deliver more taste, aroma, and color with just 96 calories. So – Do you want to consume these 96 calories together?
Well, I would like to comment a little bit on the culture of Miller Lite, if that's okay.
Sure, please do.
If you find yourself consuming a Miller Lite, there is a 0.001% chance you got it through a GoFundMe Buy Me a Beer app.
What about also if you have a Miller Lite, there's probably one guy in your crew that is going to slam the top of it on top of yours so it overfoams on the top. What do you think?
How about... If you're holding a Miller Lite, you're probably standing next to somebody who's choked a stripper.
That's a little extreme. I think that's more of a Coors Light move. But,
easy now. Silver bullet, baby. Good enough for Dimebag, good enough for everybody. Well, the weird thing is right after I opened my can, John Madden came in here and started yelling at me.
What's amazing, the fact that he got there so quick since he only travels by bus. By RV. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Get it right, dipshit. Get your head out of your ass, loose cannon.
Okay.
All right. Well, enjoy. Thank you, Jackson.
Okay. You want to get into it?
Let's get into it.
Alice and Chains.
Alice and, huh?
Alice and Chains. Sorry.
Yeah. You give me all this David Lee Roth crap. Alice and Chains, you jackass.
Allison Chains.
Allison?
All right, Paco, it's time for another episode of Breaking the Record, where we cover Alice in Chains dirt.
Right on. You know, I would like to say one thing. Actually, no joke, a little bit serious right off the bat. There is no chance that we aren't going to be talking about drugs during this episode. And of course, we are want to kind of crack and make little one-liners here and there. I just want to make one thing perfectly clear that drug addiction is pretty serious. It is an addiction, and it is something that we're not trying to make light of as we go through this. We're having fun with this record. We're going to do what we normally do, but just this seems like an area that might be kind of sensitive to some people, and understandably so. But please just enjoy it for what it is, for what we do. We are not actually trying to minimize the struggles that people that deal with this stuff, because this record is basically about fucking shooting heroin into your veins.
Well, I'm not sure what kind of material you had prepared. I had nothing to do with that. What the fuck kind of dark asshole are you?
And it begins. Yeah, let's get into it, man. What do you got?
All right. So I figured, I don't know if you want to go first or anything, but I kind of wanted to find out a little bit about your history with the band, when you first ran into them,
sure,
were aware of them, things like that. You want to start with that?
Yeah. You want me to go first or do you want to go?
No, you can go.
You know, I think I definitely knew of them before this, but they really kind of broke with Soundgarden and Pearl Jam, even though the Facelift record came out about a year prior. But they were the opening act on the Clash of the Titans tour with Slayer, Anthrax, and Megadeth. And they were great. I really enjoyed it. I had heard Man in the Box a little bit, and for whatever reason, that song just didn't click with me until I actually sat down and listened to it, which was quite some time after it. And pretty much from that point on, I was hooked. Lane Staley's voice, the guitar tone, the rhythm playing of Jerry Cantrell. And by the way, he's a great lead player, too. And he knows how to accompany a song, you know, basically from front to beginning. He's one of my favorite guitar players, definitely of that era, that's for sure. But the whole package, the weird thing I will tell you about Alice in Chains is, like, visually on almost every level, they didn't connect with me. I think their logo sucks. I think almost all their album art is kind of like unappealing. Their personal images, like the way they like Jerry is very boring looking. Lane can be kind of unsettling to look at, depending on what phase of Lane you're catching. Mike Starr was always a cool looking guy, and the drummer just always looked like a drummer. But it was always about the music with this band with me, and they definitely connected. Once I got over that hurdle, that was like, I really didn't care for the meow, meow, meow until I, you know, got a chance to really break it down. And then I got kind of hooked, and that first record's great. We're obviously going to be talking about Dirt today, and I'll save my kind of synopsis of this record for a little bit, but just a great band with a very short lifespan. It's unfortunate. I mean, I know they're still going today, but we're talking about the original kind of crew. How about you?
Similar, where I didn't see him in 1990 like you did, but I had Facelift about within a couple weeks of owning Skid Row, the debut album.
Okay.
Like, for whatever reason, I got that one later. And the reason I mention that is there really wasn't any, and I played those things like to death, whatever time that was. And I didn't see a drastic difference. Yes, there's a drastic difference between Alice in Chains and Skid Row, but I'm saying, to me, it was just rock. This is before the whole idea of grunge even hit from the record labels.
I do agree that to a certain extent they were kind of pulled into the grunge scene, but the way they approach songwriting, their harmonies, and their image, everything was different.
It was different. It was different, but to me, it wasn't anything different than listening to Metallica versus Skid Row.
Fair enough.
I mean, it was just another. It was another form of aggression and vocal. Yeah. Style. Anyway, no, I get what you're saying there. But my point is that I forgot the fact that I have seen Alice in Chains six times, three times with Lane, and I forgot the fact that they opened for Van Halen on the Fuck Tour, and I also saw them at Lollapalooza. I also saw them open for Kiss, and then three times without, including the Northern Invasion last year with you.
You saw them open for Kiss. Well, did they only do like two or three shows?
That's it. I was actually going to have Stone Temple. See, the show that I saw was the third show of the arena tour in Louisville. He was so drugged out, and then they took another drugged out band to replace them. So I was able to see him a third time there with Lane. But my point,
I watched
Halen,
video today of their last performance, like as a band, and that was opening for Kiss. I don't know if it was in Louisville or not, but Lane looked like horrible, and the band was really out of sync.
No, they were not good that night. But then I saw them. With Van Halen, they're great because that was on the facelift tour. Yeah. But my point is think of that though. They're paired with Van Halen, Mr. You know, a happy go lucky kind of band, if you want to think about it. But to me, it didn't seem weird.
You know, we just kind of wrapped up March Madness, where we kind of dove into records that were kind of depressing and sad to listen to. So when we were talking about records, you know, I was telling you I really wanted to do something that was just kind of an upbeat party rock anthem album. And what did you come back at me with?
Dirt, come on.
Hell yes, baby.
And, you know, I got to tell you, like, the whole thing, I just have to do a quick rant. Is that okay? It's my show too, right?
With yeah, 50? You know what? You don't get enough rants. Give us one, baby.
You know, I listen to a lot of music podcasts. And, friends, the one thing that drives me batty is the constant conversation of bands that you love when they talk about the 1991-92 death of what the party was over.
Oh, yes.
Everything was done when this grunge stuff came in and killed everything. We've said it before. I'm going to still stand up to it because I was like, do we do the Dirt album? Because maybe some people don't like grunge on this show. Because the man has perpetrated a lie that you've listened to for your entire life, and that is that Nirvana came in with a fucking three dirty bean smelling bastards from Seattle, as you've said before, and shot hair metal dead. What killed hair metal is fucking Trickster, Sleaze Bees, Wart, which I like. Coming out with an album called Cherry Pie, okay? If there wasn't a poster child that was a poster behind the receptionist at that music label that didn't represent the death of hair metal it was to come, it's the cover for Cherry Pie. Think about that to begin with. The cover is a picture of what? Like a girl, like the roller skate like girl, right? Yes? Is she on roller skates or not?
That little spunk material, Bobby Brown. She's on the cover and she's like staring, like she's got her tits out and there's a cherry pie parked right in front of her vagina. Yeah.
Right. And she looks very alerted to the fact that it's there. I mean, instead of calling it Cherry Pie, why didn't Warrant have a cat falling down in the middle of her that area and just call it Pussy? Okay, how about a one of those little chew toys that you get from the pet store and it's just called Squish? Okay,
how about like like an axe falling down and you call it Hatchet Wounds?
How about a locker down there, and it just says gut locker.
How about Kenny Rogers in a taco, and it's called Bearded Taco.
So Kenny Rogers has got to be there with his beard.
Yeah, you need a beard.
Why not the two? What about photoshopping the two guys from ZZ Top there on the side?
That's better. Yeah, the Billy Gibbons in a taco, Bearded Taco.
Or how about that you add a little bit of pooch there and just call it Gunt?
Oh, not too far, bro.
Oh, that was too far?
Too far, man.
My point is, there's an old tall
I have
tale.
A mother and a sister, you son of a bitch.
I have a daughter. And she will never listen to this show.
Thank God.
Yes. Now, listen to me. There is a tall tale told by Jenny Lane, probably very drug-addled.
The cherry pie guy?
Yeah, the cherry pie guy, okay. Who's talking about there was a day that he went to the record label, and the receptionist used to have a poster, like I just said, of Cherry Pie behind her. First off, how the fuck is that in a corporate environment?
Welcome to Columbia Records. How can I help you?
To pay no attention to the woman with the cherry pie in her vagina behind me.
Totally cool with this behind me.
Totally cool. And he says, I knew things had changed because I went in there. Apparently, he likes hanging out in the receptionist area in the story, waiting for somebody to talk to him. It had been replaced with Alice in Chains dirt, which is yet another poster you should not have behind a receptionist.
Another kind of much different way to inappropriately portray the female gender. But
buried.
I've heard the story from Janie before. The weird thing is, I get his point. He's like, see, things change. Janie, there was a poster up there before your record came out that came down. Do you think once it went up, it's like, that's going to be there forever? Where's my bottle of Mad Dog?
My God. So enough about that. Alice in Chains is nothing. Alice in Chains and Soundgarden in particular are nothing but Tony Iommi worship brought into the 90s and channeled through Seattle.
I agree with that. More with the sludgy tempos and riffs. But they definitely, I mean, in very different ways, attacked the guitar in a way that really wasn't being done by anybody else. And Alice in Chains was you know, they're almost like defined by the drop D tuning. Where Soundgarden, you know, really experimented with a lot of different tunings.
Agreed. More Alice in Chains.
A lot of layers and kind of odd tones. But yeah, they definitely both come from that Black Sabbath root. You know what I mean? It's kind of like you're not off base there.
Yeah, but the one thing I really respect about Alice in Chains is they use the Indiana Jones template, and that is for the first one. In comparison, you know, it's like Raiders. It's a little bit light. It's a little bit more fun, and then they were really dark, and much more superior with Temple of Doom, like for the sequel. Don't you agree?
I think that's the worst analogy I've ever heard in my life.
Facts for us to share?
Yeah, let's get into this real quick. Alice in Chains Dirt was released on September 29th, 1992. If I remember correctly, Luce, that is your parents' silver anniversary of the day they met at a library. It was recorded at a handful of studios, Eldorado Recording in Burbank, London Bridge in Seattle, and One-on-One in Los Angeles. The running time is a smooth 57:37. It's on Columbia Records. And produced by Dave Jordan. And the only thing I'm going to give you with my overall synopsis right now, this might be a perfect record minus one song. There's my tease.
Okay. Good to know. Continue, please.
You know, I got a book on Alice in Chains. Let me just say it's written by Dave De La Soul. It's simply called Alice in Chains. So
is that a pen name for Martin Popoff?
Yeah, it's not the 19th Black Sabbath book, but this is kind of where Lane's drug addiction started to become a big problem. At one point, Dave Jordan actually called him out on it a little bit. It ended up turning into a little bit of a thing, but they were able to get back to it where Dave was like, I'm not trying to make this personal. I just want to make a good record. But basically, he came in kind of smacked out, and he wasn't singing very good, so he sent him home. And the next day, from that point on, though, once they kind of patched it up, apparently Lane was just killer the whole way through. Well, it sounded like tensions with Mike Starr started kind of around this time while they were in the studio. For one thing, he was partying a bit heavy, and it turns out he needed help from someone to kind of actually learn his bass parts, someone that he trusted, but he kind of leaned heavily on him. But another thing is that like he was really trying to get a song on the record called Fear the Voices, and it sounds like Lane was on board, but Cantrell was not. And Mike Starr has said in times since that, like, basically Jerry wanted him out of the band, and Jerry didn't want this song on the record because he didn't have anything to do with the writing of it. The song eventually got released on their music box, music bank box set, whatever that was called. So it's out there if you want to check it out. It's called Fear the Voices. I think it's actually a pretty solid song. There was a record review. You want me to do that now?
Please, yes.
Okay.
So this is from Rolling Stone, I assume?
This is from actually the Los Angeles Times. The Los Angeles Times took this album to task. They said, hear them sneer, hear them moan, hear them try to sound like Nirvana or Mother Love Bone or something, but come out closer to Kansas. I'm going to stop there. I can keep going, but... I mean, come on,
Kansas.
Seriously? What the fuck are you listening to? Whoever wrote that review went in with like an axe to grind. It's like asking me to review a Quiet Riot record with an American Idol singer on it. Come on.
but still, like that person, you know, didn't even listen to it. Kansas? That's their stretch? Fucking Kansas?
A couple last things for you that I think you're going to enjoy. Sean Kinney had an alter ego that he gave a name. I would like you to guess the name, and seriously, guess the name.
Jackson Galaxy.
Steve.
No.
Yes, his drunk alter ego was Steve. And away we go with this fucking Van Halen party album.
A bit of a party album. It's talking about bones, them bones.
Yeah, them bones, baby. Bones in you. Yeah.
Yeah. Come on. It's like 2.5 minutes. It's got a little pep in the step. Little fun. How can you call this grunge, man? I'm ready to fucking throw down, throw some beers back, and it's a lot of fun. Yeah?
I definitely threw a lot of beers back with this cranked somewhere, but yeah.
Come on. Yeah, this song, like Alice in Chains, they start off both Facelift and this one with a little peppy song. Yeah?
Yeah, what was the We Die Young is the opener on that, right?
That's right. But it, again, it's almost the same template in a good way. Like it's just
sure, it's like a under
album.
3 minutes, kind of got a yep. I think We Die Young is a stronger track, but no issues
too.
With this one.
Nope.
I feel so alone, gonna end up a big old pile. Hey, I think he's talking about everybody ends up dead.
Man, all I gotta tell you is those guitars are so just...
Yeah,
I mean,
the guitars in this record just sound perfect. Do you like the...
You know? Oh, I do, of course.
Okay. I've never been a big fan of it. I just... it's okay. I don't... like.
Now you've ruined the song for me.
Of course, I'm way off on the math, and I do like the song. I just that one thing I never really liked that a whole lot. So
I think that lends itself to things I think we're going to mention throughout this album, and that is when you look at Layne Staley.
Okay.
Now, I could never imagine him having any other job but being a rock star. Okay.
He actually talks about that.
Who?
Layne Staley. Apparently, he figured like early on that if he became famous, his dad might want to come back into his life. And it turned out he was right with tragic results. His dad went from being clean to being a junkie with Layne.
Wow. Are you kidding me? Good God.
No, that's pretty well documented by Layne anyway. Yeah, and it turns and like even Lane, like one of his last interviews, he said, yeah, and after all that, like my dad would just come visit me only because he wanted to get, you know, some smack, and he was able to actually get off it, and I wasn't.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not sure.
How- it gets fucking dark if we start talking about that dude, man.
I know. That's why I'm gonna go to what Lane Staley could have been successful at. Besides a rock star, he could have been successful as the guy that takes your vitals and when you're getting a physical that says, open up and say, ah! Come on.
You know, in the perfect scenario there, like he'd actually be behind the doctor and the doctor would say, open up, and he'd go, ah!
Then the inspiration continues with a story about the struggles of a beaver called Damn That River.
I fucking love this song.
Oh, my God.
That opening riff might be one of the, like, I mean, my God, if that doesn't fucking get you erect, you know, watching Hulk jerk off to upscreen videos won't either.
I think the Hulk's material is Damn This River. What do you think?
But there's a couple times where they do something with the guitar on this, where the opening riff is like kind of low, and then as soon as the singing kicks in, it just shifts up like, it just got a great little groovy underlying, slide up the neck into a different key, man. It's just killer. Again, just like back to back examples of where Cantrell is basically at his fucking peak right now. You can tell this guy wasn't spending a whole lot of time shooting he wasn't chasing the dragon. That's what
no,
I was going for.
No. And also like this, Them Bones, Damn That River. Yes. At this point, are either of these songs really about heroin?
No, not really. I mean, Them Bones is about dying, so you can kind of relate that to the end result, because all the heroin songs aren't like, I like heroin, I'm going to shoot up heroin. They're more about the mental state that gets you to it and then the destructive effect it has on you. So Them Bones could, by theory, be tied into that.
Well, I mean, but Them Bones and Damn That River, to me, they're just two balls out rock songs to me. Like I don't feel depressed and grungy or anything like that so far on this album. I'm feeling pretty good, feeling upbeat, like a Cabo. This is like Cabo Wabo to me.
it's probably not like finish what you started upbeat, but this is okay. I will say this: if you were a fan of Facelift, you are hooked two songs in.
I And with that too, you know, it says, so you couldn't dam that river and it washed me so far away. We get into some more liquid with rain when I die. I got to tell you, though, again, this one, don't feel any needles. Don't feel a prick. Don't feel any kind of spoon nearby at all.
Well, I mean, let's. But before you turn this into the Sunshine Happy Hour, we did talk about Them Bones, which is a song about you basically ended up under a pile of dirt as just rotted bones.
Well, that's everybody's, man. Yeah,
the song is literally like, it's going to. Not only are you going to be dead, but it's going to fucking rain that day. Yeah, everything fucking is not peachy at all on this record. These songs, while not directly about the drug stuff that we're going to get into, are very much a part of setting the tone and the tenor of this record. I mean, there is just... I will say this. Lane Staley had a way of saying the darkest shit in the most beautiful way. And I think this is a good example of it.
You know, I heard the demo is a 6% chance of showers when I'm deceased.
I think there's a 90% chance of rain.
I mean, what's the problem? It's just a forecast. It's going to rain when I die.
Maybe a little hail. But no tornadoes. Well, they're from Seattle. There's pretty much a good chance that it's going to rain whenever you're doing anything.
Exactly. Rain when I shop.
You know what? That's more upbeat.
So track one is Bones. It's actually going in reverse order because the bones is the end.
They're found in a river while it's raining.
While it's raining, and then all of a sudden you're in the hole. Listen, I think this album should have started with Sick Man because he's starting to get sick, and then he dies and he's down in a hole, right? And occasionally he plays with his friend the rooster. No? But Down in a Hole, a beautiful ballad about being dead. Yes?
I love Down in a Hole. We're 4 for 4 at this point. I have not, like, the first time I heard this record, I could not have been happier.
Yeah, this is a beautiful song. Down in a Hole, just everything about it is perfection.
I love the unplugged version of it.
Yes, but and we should mention that too. Unplugged, not that bad. There are some great versions on there, but they also play a 9-minute version of Frogs.
I'm sorry, but you get more uptight about stuff like that than I do. I think we have a opposite, like a bizarro version of that coming up on the record here.
Okay, fair enough. Any other comments you wanted to talk about?
Just if you don't like the song, you should probably, I don't know, just stop listening to music.
Die!
Yeah, I would like to actually take a second to remind people that there were 5 singles off this record. This record sold 4 million copies, and these some of these songs were actually played on radio. The hard metal radio station that is in every market now didn't really exist back then.
No, I mean, first off, I guess the single, one of the singles, Wood, was, you know, on singles beforehand, but then it kind of, I don't know if they re-released it or how it was.
No, they didn't re-release it. They just added it to the record, but let's not get too crazy on that. But like Them Bones fine. Was actually played. Angry Chair, I think, was the last single, if I remember the timing of it right. I could be totally wrong, but Rooster actually got a lot of airplay, but let's wait till we get to that to talk more on that. Sick Man, not my favorite track in the record, but God, it's still a really good fucking song.
Yeah, I am not a fan of this song at all. This is the first one that is a skipper for me. It's very, I guess, ambitious, but something about it doesn't click. There's a lot of irritation. Like you said, the thing that you don't like that on Them Bones, who goes, this is like 9,000 versions of that.
I know what you're talking about. And I didn't really say I didn't like it. I just, I'd be okay if it wasn't there.
Well, okay. Well, then that's if you're saying this is a perfect record, minus one or whatever, this is, I have more than that. And this one is gone, deleted. So,
man, I know the music on this and those changes that they almost kind of got that carnival beat going. That great fucking two-part harmony that they do is just, I think the part that I probably agree with you with is the main verse is like, what the hell have I? But man, that music underneath it just delivers.
There's parts I like about this, but it just doesn't work. There's a lot of, tempo changes that just seem very forced. It just doesn't work for me. That's
yeah. I know what you're getting at there. I don't necessarily agree, but I understand why you feel that way. Yeah. I will say this: if the first 4 tracks are like in the all like the good pile, this would be my start of the, But again. Looking at, you know what, I'll come back to this, but I'm looking at this as an entire album, A to B. This is a record I think does need to be listened to in sequence. Well, Lane said this album is kind of like a two-part conceptual album, and one is about drug use, and the other is about what leads up to drug use. So I think the first half of the record is about that, and the second half is more getting into the actual like act.
Okay.
If I'm understanding him right. Look, the guy was a fucking junkie.
So, next up is Rooster. And for whatever reason, I was not aware of this until doing a little bit of refreshing my memory on this album. But are you aware that Rooster is their biggest song ever?
Not surprised, I guess.
I guess I wasn't surprised, but it just...
I hadn't thought about it at all. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So with that said, Rooster has, and I know it's about Cantrell's dad, and I know it's about him coming back from Vietnam. I know all of this.
I think you're wrong there. I think it's about Hulk rubbing one out. Snuffing the rooster, baby.
So that's what it is, choking the rooster? until I was told that story about it, I was like, why are they talking about a rooster? And Lane Staley always kind of looked like a rooster to me. Like he would like always like put his head up a little bit, like he was doing the rooster and stuff, and his hair kind of looked like the top of a rooster. And I just thought it was kind of like a nickname or something silly like Nib, like NIB was Nib and stuff like that, just like a thing. But with that said, if you're going to say this is a, if you're going to call it, this is a ballad or whatever it is, or a mid-tempo song, Down in a Hole, no pun intended, buries the song in comparison. It's never worked for me. They end their concerts with it all the time, which is a weird, they did that at Northern Invasion too. And it's like, hey, let's bring this down to a halt and then say goodbye to you and walk off the stage. That's my opinion of the song. It's okay. It's never done anything for me. Your thoughts?
Ditto.
Really? I thought that you were going to tell me this is your favorite song on the album or something.
No, I've never. I kind of get why. You know, it's like one of those songs. Like we were just talking a little bit about that. You know, with that whole thing with Godsmack in the last episode. I get why this connected with people, and I get why this was the song. It's kind of easy to digest if you're not really into Alice in Chains. There's some parts I really like about it, but I never really cared for the clean electric guitar doing so much of the work by itself in the early on. But I really, at the same time, I do think it's a good song. I really enjoy the harmony and the ooh. I actually watched the music video for this today too, and I forgot how fucking graphic and kind of disturbing it was. I mean, you see a guy's leg blown off, and he's sitting there freaking out, staring at his like stump, and it's bleeding and shit. I mean, I'm surprised this didn't traumatize me. And you're right. This is Kiss playing Beth as an encore. This makes no sense to me at all. Like, no. Throw it in the middle of your fucking show. Now, in general, I actually have issues with Alice in Chains now, live. I just...
As do I.
They perform and sound good, but their set I've never cared for, and they just... they bore the fucking shit out of me. And they're one of my favorite bands, and it pains me to say that because... they meant so much to me at a time in my life that was very important. And to see them still out there doing this, and to actually, you know, I approve of it. I'm not, like, anti that. I just wish that I liked it, and I don't. I'd want to go home and listen to the records I like. I just think, for whatever reason, they just stop their songs. They kind of look at each other.
That's what I'm saying to you. That was supposed to say. Actually, that's my only issue with it, is they act like this. They're in rehearsal.
Well, they definitely act like they've never put a set list together.
It's
like,
the same set list.
This is a great opening song. This is a great closing song. We kind of want to arc and flow it in between. No, right. They're just like, they're assembling the worst sequenced greatest hits album.
Their set list, their pacing sucks. They don't know how to sequence. Yes?
There we go, yeah.
Was Junkhead Archie's nemesis?
Yeah.
Was it Jughead? Was
Jughead? You know damn well it was Jughead. Probably, it's definitely one of my top five Alice in Chains songs of all time, which puts it, this is one of the three that I was saying is contention for the best song in the record. I absolutely adore this song. I mean, it is so fucking killer, and it's so believable, too. This is where the kind of really seedy drug message starts coming in, you know? You know, what's my drug of choice? And the way those two harmonize that is just almost the perfect example. Like if someone asked you, what is Alice in Chains? You should play them the chorus to Junkhead. It sums everything up, from the guitar tone to the tempo to the way those two harmonize together. It is just a beautiful example of darkness, and I love it. I can't say enough good things. Also, remember earlier I was talking about like that kind of like that low boom boom, but when they kick into the chorus, and actually if you could at some point just take it from the end of the second verse into the second chorus, where he's just like, yeah! It is fucking one of the most spine-chilling moments in rock for me.
Baco,
hey, Loose Cannon.
I just wanted to tell you something real quick, okay?
What's that?
Just so you know, I want to taste dirty, a stinging pistol in my mouth, on my tongue, and by the way, I want you to scrape me from the walls and go crazy like you've made me. Those lyrics, the first time I heard them, were terrifying to me.
Yeah.
Like the way that he sings them. And the way that you believe them, and just basically yep. saying, "I'm going to put this gun in my mouth. I'm going to blow my brains all over the wall, and I'm going to make you go insane from finding me like this." I was like, yeah. "Oh my God!" And this was the first song where on the album. The first time I heard it, I still can recall it just being like, "This is possibly the most darkest, the darkest song I've ever heard."
Yeah, I don't know that I ever had that kind of immediate reaction to things like that. I will say this, you kind of hear it, and in the back of your head, you're kind of hoping this is like, you know, kind of...
You hope that it's like Alice Cooper, and it's just like... But
well, not to that extent.
You know what I'm saying?
You're touching on real... Alice Cooper's more vaudeville.
That's what I mean.
I'm saying for me, I want this to be kind of a touching on an elaboration of a real feeling, not literal retelling of what you're going through. You know what I mean? It's like... this is like the Ballad of John and Yoko, but it's the Ballad of Lane and Heroin.
Yeah, I want you to kill me and dig me under. I want to live no more. Yeah. The thing about it is two things. Is one, the lyrics are so extreme. The second thing is you can hear them completely clear. there's no mistaking what you're listening to. Like sometimes you listen to stuff and you undercover it later.
I say this with hindsight and the fact that I've read and heard things over the years.
Sure.
Not referencing like when this record came out is all I mean there. But Lane was... By my experience in just reading interviews and stuff over the years, one of the most self-aware junkies that I can think of.
Okay,
he has talked many times about how like drugs worked for him and then stopped working for him, but at that point it was too late, and he actually tried to clean up quite a bit, and it was something that he fought very hard. And it's very painful sometimes to know that stuff and then go back and listen to these kind of lyrics, because it's clear that, I mean, as far back as 1992, you know, he died 10 years later, that it had taken its grip on him. And at the time, you're listening to this record, and they're also selling it as such at the time, like, yeah, you know, we kind of cleaned up, stop asking us about drugs. when in reality it was kind of miraculous that they made such a masterpiece with Lane in the state that he was.
I don't even know if I knew all that then. I just
I definitely didn't. No, I assumed it was more an embellishment of issues, you know.
Yeah. So
I actually got caught up in just how kick-ass some of these songs sounded.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just like we were just talking about Junkhead. You know, I wasn't really focused on the what's my drug of choice, what do you got?
No.
I was just like, yeah, what's my drug of choice? I mean, I was like getting those hairs on my arms just jamming the music. And it's clear looking back.
No, I mean,
it was even then. And to see how it ended, like it's truly, you know, sad is all I'm getting at.
No, I know. I'm looking at this too, and Junkhead is the only one that's. Most of these are Cantrell Staley. This one's actually Cantrell Staley and Huey Lewis.
Oh yeah. Wow.
I want a new drug. What's my drug of choice? Come on. And to follow along with that Huey Lewis inspiration, the track after Dirt is Hip to Be Square. Working title for Godsmack. You go.
Yeah. How about we reboot Dirt, and we say in modern day it's hip to buy heroin on Foursquare.
Fit that in a chorus.
Brings us to the next song, which is the only reason Godsmack is not called Sully in the Stepstools, and that's the song Godsmack.
A shame, if you ask me. I would really enjoy Sully.
I really wish I just saw a show with Sully and the step stools. No, true story. I mean, they've owned it, right? Like, they named themselves after this song.
In prepping for this, I guess I just never really noticed that it is basically, even though it was a CD era, it was like we have the side one and we have the heroin side. Side two.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, it just goes straight into it. Like, the first ones are just like hints, but I mean, we're what, three songs in a row? Three, four songs in a row of just pure addiction? So, for the horse, right there. For the horse you've grown most fonder, right there is just right there, heroin.
Well, if you listen to in the verses there, it sounds like there's an effect on his voice, but according to the engineer on the record, that's just Lane, and he has no idea how he did it.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, as individual tracks, some of these, like, stick out more than others, but now we're kind of getting towards the end of the record, and I feel comfortable saying, the reason I call this almost a perfect record, because if you listen to it in sequence, it almost tells a story without diving or without, you know, becoming a concept record, which I really think is an impressive feat. But at the same time, these songs seem to follow a pattern that makes sense. Like, these guys went into a studio and wrote a record, and they spent time making sure the right song went after the right song.
My God, we're getting kind of serious for the Cobras and Fire show. So how about we kind of lighten it up a little bit and talk about, you know, what other jobs, like we kind of hinted at earlier, that Lane Staley could have done besides being a rock star? Yeah?
Yeah, I'm in, man.
Okay, cool. Can I begin?
Yeah, go for it. What's your first one?
Well, I think that he would have been an excellent Walmart greeter. So you go in there, the doors open, they slide open, and he just goes, ay, 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 L7 is where you can find that. Your thoughts? Yes? No?
That's.
He would definitely bring up the mood. I mean.
He's probably not old enough to be a Walmart greeter in 1992. He'd probably lose it because of ageism, not because of a crippling heroin addiction. Walmart's all fine with that.
Yeah, but he'd be singing that, but also he's dead behind the eyes, so he's perfect for the job. Yes? What about you?
Well, I think he'd do great as an overnight clerk at a 24-hour porn retailer.
How so?
You just sit there at the counter and just, I mean, there's not a whole lot of work to do. You just got the weirdos coming in.
Just in general, like, just a guy that has no ambition, that works at a porn star.
He works, he's like sells like old Playboys and makes change for the porn booths.
And Jizzmopper, yes?
He doesn't seem inclined. That ambitious, though. Jizzmopper seems more like someone who's got ambition, baby.
That is something you work up to. I think.
Yeah. So no. Right now, he's just sitting behind the counter, smoking cigarettes, reading a magazine.
Maybe that's a side hustle, Jizzmopper. Just get a little extra income. I think Lane could have a great career as an uninspirational speaker. Your thoughts?
Does that pay well?
I'm not sure.
That seems like a pretty easy gig to get.
Just get up there and talk about shit you don't like for 30 minutes to an audience of people that go home sad. What else? What are some other jobs he could do?
I think he'd be great at his medical supply sales, specializing in needles and syringes.
He would not be a very successful drug dealer. I can tell you that much. He's like Smokey and Friday. I don't know. He was the inspiration, I think, from the Pixar movie Bugs.
I can only imagine. I've never seen it.
Okay, well, for those that enjoy cartoons about bugs, you'll get that joke.
I thought he'd be great as a CEO for Trump Industries.
What, just because he's – I don't even get that, and it's still funny.
It's the big title with – that pretty much anybody can do. I'm just saying, you can put like a fucking beanbag chair and it could be CEO of Trump Industries.
What about, I don't know why I just visualized this, but I think he would be great as a medieval times waiter.
Oh, man. Yeah, I like that one, actually. Yeah,
just
okay.
Come up. Just come
yeah,
up
the
to
problem
you
is
it.
He's going
to
fuck your order up and probably won't even, he probably won't even remember to bring your food back because he'll be out by the dumpster fucking, you know, getting high. I have one left. I think he can be a DJ at Tommy Lee's wedding.
What about him as a strip bar DJ? What he would do?
Like, he would be like, hey, fellas. just here's candy. That's how he would do it.
Okay, so let's move on to the masterpiece of the album, and that is 43 seconds of genius called Iron Gland.
So I'm guessing, because I know you, that you hate this and think this is a waste of time.
No, man, I dug this because it was just kind of a nod to their, you know, their influences. So that's it.
Yeah, no, I like it in the sense of what I was just saying a minute ago, that when you sequence this record, this is kind of cool where they put it, and it's, you know, like a little break, and all of a sudden you get into the next track.
But also, in a way, it's kind of like our whole thing we just did with his jobs, you know.
Yeah,
with okay. Lane, it's a little bit of a joke.
Sure. Yeah. No. I mean, they're having a little fun
in the middle of a bunch of darkness. And says, "Okay, Jesus, this might be getting a little dark. Let's get the guy from Slayer in here to scream for 43 seconds and go on to the next track." Anyway, so Hate to Feel.
I believe this has got to be on your list of great songs.
Gone. Yep, this is an 11 track album for me, and that includes Iron Gland. So Gone okay. with Sick Man, Gone with Hate to Feel. Continue,
okay.
please.
I still haven't removed my track yet. Have you paid
attention
to that?
I think that's it. That's got to be it.
Nope.
It's 5 minutes and 15 seconds of not that bad. Is that what you're saying?
Basically, yeah.
And we are into what I find the most amusing title of the album, and that is Angry Chair, which I believe I'm sitting in right now talking about this song.
You don't like Angry Chair?
Oh, I'm just saying. I'm sitting in an angry chair. It's right next to my jerk chair. Oh. And just so you understand, there's a thing of tissues in between both of them. One of them is used for crying when I'm in my angry chair, and the other is used for other purposes when I'm in the jerk chair. It's multi-purpose. So everybody needs an angry chair and a jerk chair, happy and sad. What is an angry chair? You tell me.
Well, I'm sitting in an angry chair.
Why?
Well, angry walls steal the air. I mean, my stomach hurts and I don't care. Okay. What do I see across the way?
A bear.
See myself molded in clay.
Okay.
Stares at me, and yeah, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Changing the shape of my face. That's a goddamn angry chair, you idiot.
I guess so. That sounds like a single. I would release that.
Yeah.
That's gonna really just
jet
up the charts. Shadows dancing everywhere. Little boy made a mistake. A pink cloud has now turned to gray.
I'm gonna tell you right now, the perfect album just ended because this is the perfect ending song for this record. This is where they should have stopped. It was a 12 song, 6 songs each side, and Angry Chair is a great closeout song. It's a really cool tune, but what a way to end a record.
Yeah.
I'm guessing this has to do with all of your anger and all of your sitting apparatuses over the course of your life, where you just don't like it when they add a song that was already released a year earlier. Because that's your issue with Civil War. That's going to be your argument for Wood, or just that you don't like that song to begin with.
I love the song. It's an amazing track. It wasn't just that it was released already. It even isn't just that it was released as a single already. It was a hit already. And it is the only song on this record not produced and recorded with every other song on a perfect record. This song was recorded at a different time in a different studio with a different producer and a different engineer. And they just said, well, let's throw it on here. That way people who didn't buy the soundtrack will have it too, which I get. But that is the only reason it is on here. And that is not a good enough reason for me to say it belongs on a record.
Well, I do agree the fact that it feels tacked on, but it's one of those things. Like, what else are you going to do with it? Is it only going to exist on singles?
Yep.
The single soundtrack forever?
Yeah. I mean, they have other songs on movie soundtracks that's the only place they exist. That happens all the time. I don't understand why you make this goddamn masterpiece and then you say, you know what? People like this song too. Let's throw that on there too.
Man, I'm going to say that it has to do something with a profit deal.
Yeah, it might have been a record label decision. Who knows?
Let's just talk about the song itself. I've been told that it's about Andrew Wood. I find that to be bullshit. I just think it's they decided.
Why? I mean, it happened. It came out right after he died. And yeah, they said it pretty much the moment that they released it that it was about that.
Well, I don't see any lyrics about him. It doesn't talk anything about the guy named Andrew.
Yeah, but you struggle with stuff like this. It has to be so literal, otherwise you don't think it's there. You know what I mean? They kind of use the word wood in a almost pun ironic sense.
Know me broken by my master, teach thee on child of love hereafter. There's nothing that if you read this, there's no way you could even get. There's nothing here about Andrew Wood. That's just something I think a hype. They threw it out there. Here it is. It's about a guy. It's got the same last
Can't
name.
Something be inspired by a thing or an event without being directly about it?
Nope.
Loose cannon. Oh, my Lord. Ugh. It's time to go home.
It is. This is enough dirt. What do you say?
Definitely enough dirt. How about this? Rock's not dead.
But there's a 60% chance of rain when it does.
Like Huey Lewis on the news?
They're okay.
Their early work was a little too new wave for my taste. But when Sports came out in 83, I think they really came into their own, commercially and artistically.
The whole album has a clear, crisp sound and a new sheen of consummate professionalism that really gives the songs a big boost.
He's been compared to Elvis Costello, but I think Huey has a far more bitter, cynical sense of humor.
Is that a raincoat?
Yes, it is. In 87, Huey released this. Four, their most accomplished album. I think their undisputed masterpiece is Hip to Be Square. A song so catchy, most people probably don't listen to the lyrics, but they should, because it's not just about the pleasures of conformity and the importance of trends. It's also a personal statement about the band itself.
Hey, Paul!